but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a 0.08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a 0.08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Andy Anders, 11 Warriors. I know you said last season obviously doesn't have a bearing on this season, but to what extent did the way last season ended motivate your team coming into this offseason and winter workouts and all that thing?
Yeah, for me as a coach, I've always, I think every coach probably feels this way, but we always remember the losses over the wins. I think there's a lot you can learn from that. It doesn't take away from what we were able to accomplish, but we lost to a great team. You know, Coach Day did an unbelievable job last year of having his team in position to have success there, and there's some things that I feel like I could have done better there at the end. We didn't play, I don't think we played our best football. That being said, we did go undefeated in the conference. We won the Big Ten championship in our first year. So, like I said, double down, learn, focus on our process. What do we have to continue to improve? There's always learning lessons, but it doesn't necessarily impact the future.
It's true that Oregon's season did not end the way Oregon planned for that season to end. I think they had stars in their eyes and thought the window was open. Dan Lanning speaking there in Las Vegas last week as part of Big Ten Conference Media Days. I bumped into my good friend Tyson Alger, I-5 Corridor, on the scene there in Vegas. Tyson, how did Lanning do at Media Day?
I thought he did okay. You know, it was kind of a weird event. I don't know about you, John, but I didn't think there was a whole lot of juice behind this whole Media Day thing compared to maybe some of the ones that I've been to before. But, you know, it's a long day of one-on-one interviews, of walk and talks, of being on set, of being at the center of a press conference. And, you know, Lanning's the type of coach who probably knew 99% of the questions he was going to get asked. And yeah, there was a lot of focus on kind of the way last year ended. And I do think he makes a good point of, yeah, that was disappointing and we're going to learn from that. But do keep in mind that this was an Oregon team that went 12-0 last year during the regular season. They did win the Big Ten title. And so I think it's just kind of an interesting position for him to be in the sense that, you know, they probably don't have as much hype as they did going into last season with them peaking at the quarterback position with Dillon Gabriel. And so, but this is kind of going to be the first true real season for a Dan Lanning team, where it's going to be a large mixture of the guys that he brought in through the recruiting trail. And yes, they did bring in a lot of portal guys again this year as well, but it's just for the first time in the 4 years he's been here, it's a little bit of a question mark, and I'm very kind of high on what their ceiling could be, but also it's a little bit more of a questionable floor than maybe we had during his first 3 years.
The conference, it was not a mystery to me that, you know, they had Ohio State end day one. They had Penn State end day two. They had Michigan end day three. Those were the closing acts. This still very much is a conference that holds up its tentpole programs. Oregon's in there, Tyson. I think you and I would agree they're going to compete at the top of this conference, but I kind of feel like this conference still belongs to those blue bloods, so to speak, and that Oregon's still trying to punch its way into credibility. How about you?
Yeah, I think there's some of that. You know, Ohio State has to retool a lot as well from their roster last year, but I think they get a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt because they're Ohio State, and they've won the last game of the season a few more times than Oregon has throughout their history. And, you know, if you look at Penn State, I think they are getting a little bit of the preseason shine this year. They have one of the most experienced quarterbacks coming back. They were a good team last year. James Franklin's kind of a few years ahead of Dan Lanning in the, you know, can he take the next step discussion. So I think those are kind of two notable teams that are getting a lot more talk than Oregon is. And with the offseason that USC had, you know, the Trojans have been in the news quite a bit. And I do think some of maybe what has led to less talk around Oregon is there's just not really one thing to hang your hat on with this Ducks team in terms of, you know, taking a stand and saying they're going to be excellent at this specific game. You know, they're going to have a new quarterback. They're going to have a new offensive line. They're going to have a new running back. Their entire secondary is revamped. It's a lot of unproven potential with this team. So I think there's just a lot of not knowing exactly what to talk about with them quite yet, whereas it was pretty easy the last few years when you had Bo Nix or Dylan Gabriel at quarterback.
That injury, you know, to Evan Stewart, has people wondering about experience at wide receiver. But you've got Kenyon Sadiq, the tight end. He was at Media Day. A couple of his teammates told me they refer to him as Sadiq the Freak. You know, how deliberate are they going to be in trying to get him the ball?
I think he's going to be one of the most popular players in the country by the end of the season. They told you his name was Sadiq the Freak. Bryce Betcher told me I needed to see him with his shirt off. I told him it was too early in the morning for that, Bryce, but I'll take your word for it. But it's just, you know, Kenyon was a player who was known around Oregon last year, and then he was known nationally after he did that hurdle against Penn State. And so with Terrence Ferguson graduating, with Patrick Herbert graduating, and then with Sadiq, who was already in incredible physical shape last year, he's cut about 2% body fat from where he was at a season ago. He said that's going to help him with longevity. It's going to help him with being the number one tight end out there. I think he's going to put up some pretty big numbers, and there's a good chance that he doesn't come back for another season with the Ducks.
Tyson Alger, I-5 Corridor, is with us. You know, it's hard because Vegas says the over-under win total for this team is sky high. They're always going to be set high, but I kind of wonder, given what we learned last year, going undefeated in the regular season, did Oregon learn from that? I mean, do you expect this is a team that maybe could, like Ohio State, suffer a good loss, you know, maybe at Penn State and then regroup? Or, you know, what did they learn last year?
Yeah, you know, I just think there's going to be a lot more deviation between how Oregon plays this year week to week. I mean, they, outside of those first 2 weeks of the season last year, that was a pretty well-oiled machine that didn't really, you know, suffer a problem until it smacked them in the face in the Rose Bowl. And so I think it's a challenge for, you know, this coaching staff to kind of get everybody climbing back up that mountain with very similar goals. You know, one of the things Dan Lanning said yesterday was the biggest job of football coaches is saying the same thing but in different ways and just trying to connect to people. I think last year was a very long season. It was very taxing, and it was very dramatic in the way that it ended. And there was a time where a lot of us thought that that was going to be the kind of the lasting part of the legacy of the 2024 season, because it came so close before it was demolished. And I think with this year's team, I do expect them to play bad at times in the season's first 6 to 10 weeks. They're going to have a lot of young players out there. They're going to have a quarterback who has thrown you know, less than 50 career passes for the Ducks, you know, whether it's a Dante Moore or Austin Novosad. They're going to have a lot of receivers that are going to have to prove themselves. Like, I don't expect it to be smooth, but at the end of the day, we saw in the playoff last year, it doesn't necessarily need to be the team that was best throughout the whole season. It just needs to be the team that was best at the end of the year. And Oregon still has the talent on the roster to be pretty good at the end of the year if they play their cards right.
12 teams in the playoff. 16 gives more access, more teams. Does it change who gets to the Final Four in your mind if you add 4 more teams? Or are we still talking about, you know, the top teams are going to separate, and, you know, if you had a 8-team playoff, it'd be the same 4. If you had a 20-team playoff, it would be the same 4. What do you think of the move possibly from 12 to 16?
Like, I don't need it at this point. Yeah, to be honest, John, I didn't have a problem with it when it was 4. I thought we got some pretty good matchups there at the end, and everyone will complain about a small sample size and then change the whole thing before you can really get much of a data point. And so I'm good with it at 12 as to whether or not, you know, you're going to get the best teams lined up at the end. I think that they kind of learned from what happened with Oregon last year, because you know, whether or not you want to say Oregon would have beat Ohio State again a third time, I do think that Oregon was one of the best 4 teams in the country last year and probably deserved to be in that semifinal at least. But, yeah, I mean, we're getting to an era in college football where the haves and have-nots just have further separation between them. So I do think that the best teams do and will end up filtering out in the end.
Oregon and Oregon State have talked about continuing the Civil War series. Dan Lanning had some thoughts on that yesterday speaking in Eugene. What did you make of Lanning's comments? He said he wants to continue to play the Civil War game.
Yeah, I don't know how earnest that is. I mean, I don't think any of the coaches are going to come out and say they want to be the one that ends this rivalry, and especially when you're in a press conference format and there's no pressure on you to be calling for the end of it. But, you know, we went through that song and dance last year in September, and it was weird. It was kind of fun, but I don't think anybody was really clamoring for, hey, let's do this again like this every year. It just seemed off, and we're at a point right now where both schools are swimming in completely different waters and have their own things to worry about. I get it from Oregon's point of view of saying, like, yeah, we're not going to end this thing, but, you know, they did kind of end it, and college football kind of ended it, and that's where it's at right now, and that's not to say that maybe it can't come back in a truer form years from now, but I think right now it's just kind of coach speak, if you will.
Yeah, I wondered how sincere he was being in that, because it's not going to be a popular position to say, no, I don't want to play this game anymore. Do you think Oregon State should want to play that game, Tyson?
No, I don't. I don't think that there's any incentive for Oregon State to play that game. You're basically signing up to play a team that has substantially more resources than you, that is going to be favored to win all those games. And yes, it might be fun the once every couple of years if Oregon State is able to sneak up on the Ducks and maybe force an upset. But I just don't think if I'm Oregon State and I want to present myself in the best capable or in the best possible way and not sign up for what could likely be a guaranteed loss every year, I just don't see the benefit for Oregon State either.
Malik Murphy at quarterback, they're stronger. They got better running backs this year. You've seen the schedule. It starts with Cal and Fresno State, Texas Tech, and Oregon, of course, in the first 4 weeks. Then there's about 8 games there at the end, Tyson, that are very manageable. What are your expectations for the Beavers?
You know, I think it's going to be a challenging first couple of games. I'm pretty interested to kind of see the matchup with Cal there. But then, you know, you kind of clear through that, and I want to see Oregon State kind of assert itself as the kind of the top dog of those teams, especially as they go into their new era. You know, it's we had the time where it's you feel bad for the Beavers, and you know, there's the initial outcry at the death of the original Pac-12, but we're in a position now where Oregon State can really assert itself as being the dominant team or one of the teams that run this new era. And I think putting together a good season this year will give them a pretty good running start into that.
What do you need out of Trent Bray to make that happen?
Well, I need that defense to be pretty solid week to week, which is one of the things that's his specialty. But, you know, I want to see a quarterback who decided to come to Oregon State when he had other options, and I want to see him flourish. And I think that would be a pretty good blueprint for them to kind of handle their future, because if they show that they can bring a guy in and develop him and turn him into a prospect, a lot of kids are going to be wanting to go that route.
Different kind of question, and maybe this is not necessarily a Dan Lanning question, but it came up when I was talking to Lanning. You know, he had 700 unread text messages. He had 3 missed calls. He's put on a little weight. I feel like he's going through a little bit of the work-life balance as a dad of 3 boys that, you know, a lot of people in their 30s and 40s go through, particularly men. And I said this on yesterday's show. I think this job is unrelenting. Yes, they're getting paid well, but, man, it is burnout city for these coaches because they're recruiting their own roster. They have to worry about NIL, the portal. They have to worry about, replenishing, replacing the divots of players that are leaving. They've got to deal with media. They got to deal with boosters. And I can feel Dan Lanning trying to decide what's important and what's not. You spent some time with him in Vegas. I spent some time with him in Vegas. I left that meeting a little worried about him and thinking, gosh, you know, are we ever going to see a coach that stays anywhere 14 or 15 or 16 years anymore? Tyson, what do you make of the business and the job of a coach?
Yeah, it's funny because when Dan was hired and when he hired Kenny Dillingham as his offensive coordinator, there was this big focus on, oh, Oregon has these 2 very young and inexperienced coaches. But the further we get away from that hiring, the more that's becoming the norm. And I think it's just because we're in an era where you get run down doing this. If you want to be a top 10 team during the season and then a top 10 team on the recruiting trail and then having to deal with all this NIL stuff, like there's no downtime for somebody that's of the stature of Dan Lanning. And there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. I was trying to ask him about like how he was, you know, kind of decompressing at all during the summer. And he said he tried to golf a little bit, but not nearly that much. And it just moves right back to work combo. And, you know, he's got a young family. I think, you know, this is part of why he's also decided to like lay down roots in Eugene, just because I couldn't imagine putting all this work in and then going to a different school and then trying to start that all up again. Like the building process is pretty astronomical in terms of the amount of work that it takes. And so I am a little bit interested to see if maybe he can get a little bit of a break here now that it's not so much like rebuilding Oregon and establishing your system and the Dan Lanning way. But yeah, man, I'd be ready for a vacation if I were him. And I don't think he's getting one anytime soon.
Tyson Alger, tell us what we can find on I-5 corridor here in the coming days.
Yeah, so I just posted a 10 takeaways from Media Day where I shared some behind the scenes stories. I will have Leagues Cup coverage of the Portland Timbers coming up as well. And then I am working on a Bryce Betcher profile that should be coming out, if not Friday, then on Monday. So it's a busy time for us on the corridor with soccer and football going, but it's also why we do this. So having a good time, John.
I appreciate you, my friend. There he is, Tyson Alger. Read him at i5corridor.com. I think that burnout thing with coaches is real. Rich Brooks, 18 seasons at Oregon as the head coach. Mike Bellotti, 14 seasons as head coach. I think it was a job that it already prides itself on, hey, sweat equity is where it's at, who's sleeping at the office, which coaches are getting here the earliest. But if we look at the tenure of Chip Kelly, 4 years, Mark Helfrich, 4 years, Willie Taggart, 1 season, you know, Mario Cristobal, 4 seasons, Dan Lanning now entering his 4th season, I think we're going to see more of that 3 and 4 and 5 than we will ever see of 14 or 18 seasons as a coach in one spot. I just think it's too much, and it's unrelenting, and it's demanding. And the money's too good. David Shaw at Stanford runs for the hills. Chris Peterson at Washington runs for the hills. Nick Saban at Alabama goes, I can no longer do this because this playing field has been tipped on its head, and I don't have the advantages I once enjoyed. I think it is also a young person's game. And so, I'm not necessarily saying Dan Lanning's going to leave for the NFL in a season, because I think he and his wife, Sophia, very much have talked about wanting their three boys to graduate from the same high school, given all the places they've gone. I just think there is the potential for coaches like Lanning to look over at the NFL and go, hey, at least they have a calendar. Like, they don't have 2 portal windows. There's no NIL doesn't exist. I can really just coach. I think the game has changed. I want you to leave it here. Our big splash is coming up.